What's up? I didn't know if to be a happy what's up, or a sad what's up.
Ooh, or a spooky what's up.
A spooky what's up, that's true. Happy Halloween, everybody.
We are the ghosts of a 6-0 loss.
Yep.
Ghoulish performance.
Everyone's got their Halloween jokes in at the expense of the Canucks last night. What a scary performance.
Yep. They're bleeding out.
Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and my co-host Thomas Trance, who also covers the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at DLEAMC.com. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of 5-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And oh boy, a lot to get into today on the show. Sean Gentile will join us a little bit later, and we'll talk about the Canucks and things happening around the NHL with Sean. But of course, the bulk of the show today, you know, the Canucks aren't practicing. We won't hear from Rick Tocchet or any players today. The bulk of the show will be digesting
and
what we saw at Rogers Arena.
And you know what, guys? Take the day. Take the day off.
Yes.
Come on. That was awful last night. Just awful.
That
I don't
really
know
tough.
What else to say. There was, you know, whatever. You allow a rush goal against, right? Like a unscreened wrist shot goal. You know how I feel about those. That sucks. Great play by Heischer. Seelov should have had it, but whatever. You know, those are going to happen to you a few times a year. And then, you know, you allow another rush goal. And the one that had me really shaking my head was the 5-0 goal, which actually was a Devils power play goal.
Mm-hmm.
But there was this clear hold on Filip Hronek, just like a really lazy bit of defending that, you know, in a 2-0 game or a 3-0 game is probably putting the Devils on a 5-on-3.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like, it was just so bad, but gets away with it and has the puck with a chance to clear. And it's like, they don't serve bigger pizzas at AJ's. And, you know, for me anyway, that just sequence of events, the fact that the penalty kill has been like trending in a good direction and should finish in the top 10 easily of the league, has a chance to be even better than that. There was just an element, like a lack of focus, a lack of competitiveness on that play. And I don't mean to single out Hronek, because it wasn't like he was the only offender,
mm-hmm.
but that felt typical of how the Canucks played last night. Completely absent from the vibes of this team last season. Like, I don't know, even when they had losses, even when they had bad losses, even when they played poorly, like that Minnesota Wild game or something like that, right? I never saw moments like that from this team last year. And that to me is, you know, we're not like concerned about this team from the context of, will they make the playoffs after the first month? They still have points in 7 of 9. But, you know, that's one of those plays where it just felt to me like, oh, could this snowball? Is this something more? Is this something more troubling than just a bad result one game against another great team?
A lot to digest from last night, so let's go right to the whiteboard.
All right, now, fellas, hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks today. Halloween, October 31st. And yeah, 6-0. They get blanked by the New Jersey Devils at Rogers Arena. Probably the worst performance in the Rick Tocchet era. The first time they've lost by 6 goals on home ice since 2017. It has been a while since they've put up a performance that ugly, that bad, that lopsided in the opponent's favor at Rogers Arena. As you mentioned, started ugly. Devils score on their first shot after a 2-on-1. Didn't get any better all night. And there's two things that stand out to me as huge red flags and the biggest reasons to be concerned about what we saw last night. Number one is the effort level, especially considering what we talked about all day leading into that game last night, the fact that it was the Hughes Bowl. Quinn Hughes versus his two brothers. I know you've talked a lot about how much that relationship means to Quinn Hughes. Obviously, it's such a special situation for the family. You know what that game is going to mean, not just to one of your teammates, your captain, your best player, the guy who has been putting you on his back so far this season, who won the Norris Trophy, who's the face of the franchise in a lot of ways. This is a game that he's going to have circled on his calendar. They're honoring firefighters at the game. That's a cause that he's a huge part of as well. Obviously, they're tied together because it's a game that's meaningful for him. And with all of that going into it, all of the importance for Quinn Hughes, you give your worst effort in what, the last two seasons? Honestly, going back to the Bruce Boudreau days.
Yeah.
And it's not just that you started flat with all of those considerations, right? That happens. It's not ideal, but it happens. There was zero push. 4-0 going into the third period at home. Do they have good shifts in the third? Did they have a good heavy 5-on-5 shift all night?
It's hard to say that they did because I don't know that they did. But I will say I did think the effort away from the puck was there. It's just they didn't have the puck all night. Honestly, like, there were moments where it felt like the club was made, like, there was a lack of competitiveness and pace from the Canucks, but it felt to me like that lack of competitiveness and pace manifested itself more in focus errors and sloppiness as opposed to in terms of like a true lack of effort. You know, I can at least see guys checking hard on the forecheck and bearing down and stuff, but the turnovers, the mistakes, just like the decision making, that was the side where it all felt off, where the focus all felt, you know, really poor. And yeah, look, there are some games that matter more to certain people in a locker room. Mm-hmm. You don't like to see a team truly no show like that in a game that matters to a key person in the team. Like, that's always a bad sign. And certainly everything we saw last night was a bad sign.
Yeah, and the other thing, the word I would use to describe that performance, you know, beyond embarrassing and all those things, right, which is what Tyler Myers used last night as well, but I thought it was a very passive performance by the Vancouver Canucks. As you said, they were just not on the puck very much. When they were on the puck, they were just not able to generate legitimate scoring chances with any sort of consistency. And even on the goals, like, a lot of those goals, it's almost zero resistance. It's like the Devils were going down doing drills, doing rush drills with the amount of time and space that they had. And, you know, it's defensemen backing off. It's Tyler Myers pinching and then diving out of it on his first shift of the game. It's the JT Miller giveaway. Just a very, very passive performance by the Canucks. And really, that's concerning, not just because it's passive and that's bad, but it's the exact opposite of the identity they forged last season, right? One of Rick Tocchet's favorite sayings last year, meet pressure with pressure. Nobody was doing that. They were shrinking away from pressure. They were doing the exact opposite of meeting pressure with pressure. And a big part of the reason I was confident in this team coming into the season was a level of confidence that, hey, even if they're not able to ace what they're trying to add on the rush, that they're going to have that foundation, that hardworking, defensively responsible foundation to build on. It was completely and utterly absent. We've seen hints that it has not been as successful as last year already, and then it just came crashing down last night.
The reaction from the players too, that's like we were cruising for a bruising, basically, right? That like we should have expected this based on our form of late. We didn't even play well in Chicago, where, you know, we talked about it, how many chances they surrendered. You know, they've done some good things, right? Like, points in 7 of 9 means that you're not going to be defined by what happens in October, right? The only teams defined by what happens in October are the teams that win 1 of 9 or pick up points in 2 of 9 in the month of October. The Canucks avoided that fate, so this is not what they're going to be judged on. This is what not what they're going to be remembered for. They have cleared that bar. The problem is, as far as I see it, is for all the things that are going decently well for the team, right? They are generating a bit more offensively, not last night, but mostly on the whole. Their penalty kill looks much improved. The thing that stood out to me, especially last night, and look, there was the speed element, right? The Carolina Hurricanes and the New Jersey Devils in back-to-back games just looked miles faster than the Canucks, despite all the ads up front. The ill-fitting context of the Canucks defense with their sort of new look forward approach. Yep. I mean, you were seeing those seams all over the ice. But Nico Hischier came into the building and was easily the best forward on the ice.
Yep.
I don't even know if he was the best player, because I actually thought Quinn Hughes did some incredible stuff. But Nico Hischier wrecked that game, shot fireballs, destroyed the Canucks. Like Jason style. He was a murderer. I don't know. Is that appropriate to say with Halloween?
Yeah, it's Halloween, whatever. Yeah,
okay. He was lurking around every corner. Anyway, Nico Hischier destroyed the Canucks. And at the moment, anyway, right, the Canucks have Hughes playing at the apex of his powers, but none of their star forwards are.
No.
I mean, Jake DeBrusk, another zero-shot game. The numbers there are getting a little disturbing, like 2 5-on-5 points through his first 9 games as a Canuck. Both are secondary assists.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one forward on the Canucks with a lower 5-on-5 shot rate. Do you want to know who it is?
Neil Zaman.
Neil Zaman.
Yikes.
That is tough.
That's not good.
So, and then, you know, look, I think Besser's been Vancouver's best forward on the season, right? But that, it's Besser or Garland.
Yeah.
And, you know, really good top six caliber players. In fact, I view them both as top line caliber players. But JT Miller obviously wasn't good enough last night. He looks pretty limited still, right? He looks just so far away from 100%. And
yep,
that saps a lot of juice from this team. And then Elias Pettersson looks even further from 100% and had another mystifying, you know, flat, juiceless performance against the Devils. And if that's going to be what this looks like, right? If the Canucks don't have the horses, the elite horses up front, it's going to be hard to skate with a high-end team like the Devils, who are getting an apex-level performance from one of their star forwards, which they absolutely got in Nico Hischier. Last night just felt more like any other game this season, like it was the Quinn Hughes show.
Yeah.
And, you know, he can do it alone against a lot of teams in this league, but not when you're up against the best.
I think we're really starting to see the limits, and we did start to see the limits last night of the, you know, Quinn Hughes is going to do everything for us strategy, right? I made the comparison that it felt like watching Kobe Bryant on the Lakers teams, like between the championships, where his teammates were like Smush Parker and Gennaro Pargo, right?
Kwame,
and
it's like Kwame Brown.
Yeah, and it's easy to be like, well, Kobe's being really inefficient tonight. It's like, well, yeah, have you seen who he has to pass to? And look, obviously the Canucks have talent on this team, but it's just not playing up to the ability. And so there's a lot of shifts, whether it's the power play or 5-on-5, where Quinn Hughes is putting in a huge amount of effort. And then it ends with him kind of taking a non-threatening shot from an inefficient area from the point, almost out of frustration. And a part of me looks at that and is like, man, why is he doing that? But nobody, like, guys aren't doing stuff. Guys aren't getting open. Guys aren't putting themselves in a position to get shots off. And oftentimes when they do, they're passing up on those shots or they're not making the most of them. So I think it's understandable why Hughes feels like he has to kind of take on that workload, even if I thought we really started to see some diminishing returns from that strategy. Like, we all know you can't be a one-player team and expect to be a contender. Maybe you can scrape into the playoffs if your one player is extraordinary, who's really going, but you're not going to be a contender if you're that reliant on just one player to do all your heavy lifting offensively, especially if it's a defenseman. Well,
and all your heavy lifting in from a two-way perspective, right?
Yep.
I mean, as we've talked about ad nauseum, right? There is an extent to which, you know, Vancouver's two-way form is almost entirely dependent on your Quinn Hughes minutes, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
the Canucks, for example, have outscored their opponents 5-1 in Miller and Pettersson's 69 minutes together. That number is 1-1 when it's JT Miller away from Pettersson. And by the way, Miller spent more time with Quinn Hughes than he has away from him by 15 minutes, right? Like, they're very regularly used as a five-man unit. The shot count is wild. It's like 49-28 Miller and Hughes together 5-on-5. Great. So the Canucks are winning matchups consistently mm-hmm. at the top of the lineup. That's gonna stand them well and has through the first 9 games of the season. The issue that you bump into, though, is in the minutes away, 50 minutes, JT Miller away from Quinn Hughes, 13 shots on goal for the Canucks, 31 against, right? It's just like, you know, I don't think this is something we should carve Miller for, because I think he's showing a lot of guts playing through whatever he's playing through.
Yep.
But it is context for how reliant this team is on Hughes to drive play, where in the past, guys like Pettersson, guys like Miller were able to be engines in their own right. Right now, they're not.
Mm-hmm. And then I think on top of that, you're starting to see with JT Miller, maybe some frustration creep into his game, right?
Yep.
And that leads to the not just the physical limitations, and again, full credit to him for playing hurt, for despite playing hurt, coming through in big moments at various points for this team already this year, but then you see the sloppy passes that lead to goals against as well. And You add that to the physical limitations right now, and it's he's not giving you anything close to the performance he was last season for Rick Tocchet.
So far.
No, not yet.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Again, look, and a couple of people texted in like, hey, this is one game. Absolutely. And as you said, they're not going to be judged based on what they accomplished in October. But reacting to this game, yes, there's a lot of legitimate concerns to come out of it, especially because it's not like it's completely isolated from what we were seeing leading into this, right? There were warning signs cropping up, and then it culminated in a really ugly one last night.
And look, there's two sort of things that I think are fair. Like, this is a two-track Canucks season in my mind, okay? So there's the question of, you know, this team getting to the playoffs and playing well and being a buyer at the trade deadline and, you know, emerging as this, like, consistent team that's at least in the mix, right? Are they good? And the answer to that is yeah, right? There's a lot going wrong for this team, and in spite of that, they've got points in seven of nine games.
Mm-hmm.
They have played pretty well. They have gotten through October very well positioned, right, to take a real run at a repeat Pacific Division title, a second consecutive playoff berth for the first time since, what, 2014? 10 years? And no, earlier than 2012. No, 12.
Well, so they made it in 2012 and 2013.
Right, in a full season, 12. 13 was the lockout year.
Okay. Fine.
Hey, I had to be a jerk about it. It's Halloween. The 6-11 point percentage is pretty good. Okay. All of that's true, right? There's no reason to panic about this being like a team where this is gonna snowball and they're gonna lose to San Jose on Saturday and you know they're not even a playoff team this year. What's going on? I don't think there's any cause for that. But again, this season exists on two tracks. So there's the way we normally talk about this team or have in the past. And there's the track where the standard has been raised.
Mm-hmm.
And the fundamental question about this team is, are they a contender? Can they win a Stanley Cup with this group? Right? And there are people who think so. Smart people. Dom's model. Very bullish on Vancouver's chances. But through nine games, I think we have to look at it and say, okay, they've played nine games. Their 5-on-5 profile is mid. They have a negative goal differential on the season.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they've basically played four top level teams. Tampa Bay mauled them. New Jersey mauled them. Carolina mauled them, and the Canucks got a gift from Kochetkov late to earn a point, but lost. And then they beat a Florida Panthers team that was absent two elite forwards. Whew, that's tough, right? Like, that's tough. As much as this team has picked up enough points to have a real shot to find their gear over the remaining balance of the season, it's still true that this start, while they've picked up points in seven of nine games, they've also beat three teams in regulation. Chicago, Philly, and Pittsburgh. Woof.
Mm-hmm.
So we look at the first month of the season and we note that this team is not going to be defined by what we saw. I think we have a sense that this team is good because they've survived a stretch where an awful lot is going against them. Their marquee free agent signing is misfiring. Elias Pettersson looks like a ghost of himself. JT Miller, less than 100% not driving play. Thatcher Demko hasn't even started skating with the team yet. Artur Shelovs looks lost, right? I mean, the defense has not held given the departures of Zadorov and Ian Cole, right? Outside of Hughes and Hronek. So a lot has gone against this team and they're still at a 6-11 point percentage. Take that to the bank. That's a really good sign that if this club can start to crest and get some things going in their favor, you know, things are probably going to change and the conversation will shift with it. I buy all of that. This team is too talented to look that bad with too much frequency over the course of the season. But if your standard is, have we seen this team show us that they're a contending level team in the month of October? I'd say no, right? Like on that track, the first month of the season was, you know, I'm not going to use as harsh a word as failure, but troubling. If you came into this season dreaming of a deep playoff run, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like this team has had too many holes and has not shown sufficient improvement to check that box through the early going. Plenty of time. It's not about peaking in October. It's about peaking in April. We know the roster is not a finished product. We know that if this continues or snowballs at all, Rutherford and company, I mean, I'm sure they're already getting itchy to make a trade, but performances like that will only exacerbate it. Like, there's a lot of road to run for this team to change their mind. But for 1 month into the year, again, we now know that this team's pretty good. High baseline. They're going to be a playoff team. They have a chance to get it all together and do something pretty special over the balance of the campaign. But if you're looking at this team as a contender, like, they've got a lot to prove coming out of the first month of the season.
All right, there's still lots to get into, individual performances, big picture takeaways, you know, Tockett's commentary after the game, all of that, which we can dive more into in the next segment and throughout the course of the show. But just to check some other boxes on the whiteboard here, lineup notes, as I mentioned, day off for the team today. They will practice tomorrow before taking on San Jose on Saturday. Brännström and Arshdeep Bains assigned to Abbotsford as we continue to see the efforts to accrue cap space from the Canucks. And, you know, I'll just kind of throw this out there, and this is maybe something we can put a pin in and talk about more as the show goes on. But, you know, after the performance against Carolina, and Rick Tocchet was pretty frustrated and even went as far to say about the power play specifically, there's going to be changes on the power play. We didn't see personnel changes going into that game last night. We did see some personnel changes throughout the course of the game. But I do wonder, after that performance, if it's time for, you know, a real shake-up type of practice and what those changes might look like. And, again, we're speculating because we won't know until tomorrow when they take the ice for practice tomorrow. But it feels like maybe a bit of a stay of execution for changes after the Carolina game. And I wonder if we might see them in a more wholesale fashion tomorrow when they get back to practice. For the playoff standings updates, and, you know, as you were saying, Dom's model remains very, very high on the Canucks and still has them with a 93% chance to make the playoffs, an 8% chance to win the Stanley Cup, which is what, like 1 in 12, basically? Yeah. That's not bad. And still has them finishing second in the Western Conference with 104 points behind the Dallas Stars and ahead of the Edmonton Oilers at 102 points, right? And, of course, that's factoring in Connor McDavid's absence. So if you buy into that projection, what the model thinks and sees in the Canucks, still a lot of reasons to be positive about what this team can accomplish for the remainder of the season. But I think it's also very fair to have a level of concern based on last night and based on what we've seen through nine games. All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and there is a lot of commentary coming in to the Dunbar Lumber text line after last night's game. People are fired up, so we'll try to read some. I want to talk about the power play, about Shelovs, about Elias Pettersson, about what Tocchet had to say, all of that. We'll read some of your comments as well. We'll continue to focus in on last night's performance here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.